Okay, so we're going to jump right back into our topic. We're talking about Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, which is this month. And then we're also talking about the HPV virus as well as the vaccination. We're going to go to our phone line. We're going to go to line one. And I understand we have a question from our friend Mary. What's your question?
HPV, it's dormant in my system. I've had some surgeries. And I wonder, when I get pregnant and I would like to have a vaginal birth, what is the likelihood and risk that I will transfer it to the child?
Extremely low, Mary. You don't have to have much concern about that. So what you're kind of talking about is either vertical transmission of the virus, which is very low, or and then depending on the type of HPV type, sometimes babies are born with genital warts in their oral pharynx, you know, they're sort of like going back towards their throat and those tissues in that area. That's very, very, very rare. We do not do C-sections for women who have a history of HPV infection. There's no need to be concerned. They have normal vaginal deliveries and rate of transmission is extremely low. So you can feel very confident to proceed with a vaginal delivery.
One of the things, thank you so much, Mary, for your questions. One of the things I wanted to get back with you on saying, because of course you mentioned that your mother passed away from it, and I asked you, was this something that was hereditary or were you concerned about it for you now because you're an only child? And you told me that you...
Well, I had a hysterectomy when I was 26. I had abnormal cells, I think, when I was 23. And for some reason, I got sick at about 26 and I had to have emergency surgery. And I think it was a growth on my ovaries. So they did a hysterectomy on it at that time. I do have my ovaries because they removed the mass. So my doctor told me that I really don't have to worry about, you know, the risk of getting cervical cancer. But my daughter, she's getting the HPV vaccine. I guess when she gets back, she's in the military. But she has started, but I guess they don't offer it in the military. But, you know, we just want to make sure we be proactive about it.
Certainly so.
And what's interesting, even though her daughter didn't get the full series of the HPV vaccine, mm-hmm. when she comes back, she can start off with whatever dose she did not get. So we don't give the whole series again. Mm-hmm. If she had two injections of the vaccine, she would just get the third one when she comes back.
Let's go back and talk about with our friend Jennifer, who is a cervical cancer survivor. One of the things I was asking you about was how long was your treatment? And I know a lot of people have concerns about giving their daughters or sons the HPV virus. But then when you hear the kind of treatment you have, it really will change your mind about getting that vaccination. Talk about that.
Absolutely. And it is traumatic for me to speak about this every time, but it is extremely important because mm-hmm. I'm also a breast cancer survivor. So I know the difference in the treatment. Mm-hmm. When I first started out, I had 26 weeks. Every day I had to have someone take me down to have my radiation, which meant that the radiation was in four different areas of my body, not just in one. Mm-hmm. It was in the front, the back, and both sides of my body, which has a burning sensation. And then once a week, I had to have from, I think it was 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning till 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I had to sit and have chemo. So besides all the nausea and everything else, then twice I had to have surgically inserted radioactive rods that were placed in my vagina. And that was... And no one could come in the room. It is literally that toxic that when the nurse came in, she had to come in behind a shield because there is a burning sensation. And I, of course, had basically a hysterectomy through burning from the radiation. So if you have any question whatsoever about whether or not you want to get your pap test or you want to have the HPV test, I'd really rethink that because it may be painful and it may be uncomfortable and you may be a little shy, but I'm sure you'd much rather go through
than go through
what I went through.
My goodness. Well, you are a two-time survivor, breast and cervical, so my hat is off to you.
And you too, sister.
Thank you. I know, right? We're going to high-five each other and drink a little bit more water when we're done with this show. That's amazing. You talked about saying that your mother had to pretty much kind of have the same kind of treatment as well.
Yeah, she went through, I think, about 26 radiation sessions. She was getting chemo once a week, and then she actually ended up getting that same inner radiation, but she had five treatments of it, and one of them didn't work. It pierced a hole in her,
right?
And we had to back off for a week. So, I mean, she really went through it. And then even after that, you know, the cancer kind of went in remission, so we thought, and it came back with a vengeance. So, I mean, and her biggest regret was I missed my pap.
Exactly.
You know, all this could have been avoided. I should have went to the doctor. That was her biggest regret.
Let's go to line 6 for a question. And then once we go to the question, I want to go get into the Spirit Foundation. Let's go to line 6. Line 6, are you there? Is it Karen?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Karen, what's your question?
Hey, well, first of all, I want to give a high five to Survivor. I have love chemo brain, but, well, I know what you went through, and it is rough.
Well, thank
and
you.
And I'm giving you a high five.
Right back at you.
My question is, I am a recent survivor of stage 3 triple negative breast cancer. Mm. And is there any link, and not just triple negative, but any kind of breast cancer and cervical cancer?
That's a great question.
That is an excellent question. And no, there's not a link. At the current moment that we know of, really HPV has been strictly contained to what we call mucosal surfaces in general, as far as cervical cancer plays a role. So there's, you know, we are finding now HPV playing a role in multiple different cancer types, but there's no definitive information of it being linked to breast cancer. So currently, HPV has been known to cause cervical cancer, vaginal cancer, vulva cancer, anal cancer, and as well as head and neck cancer. And those are currently, and throat cancer. So those are the ones that we've been clearly shown to be linked to, at least percentage of them linked to HPV.
Thank you so much, Karen.
The only other thing I'd like to say to anybody listening is if there's a vaccine that cuts down on this, I think it's worth it having gone through treatment. And also, just staying on top of getting yearly screening, it's
paramount.
Thank you, Karen.
Yeah, Karen, thank you so much. And since we're talking about screening, let's talk about the Spirit Foundation, because your organization does screen women for pap smears and HPV, correct? Let's talk about that.
So absolutely. Our foundation purpose and goal is to try to reduce HPV-related cancers, in particular cervical cancer in Georgia and in the U.S. and other countries that are low resource, such as Latin America and Africa, who don't have a lot of resources. We not only provide screening, which is what we do a lot here in Georgia, we also provide educational programs. So we've developed one of our signature educational program, which is called With Love We Learn, and in Spanish is called Con Amor Aprendemos, and we actually teach couples and family members about HPV and cervical cancer. As far as our screening, we work with the Harriet Tubman Clinic, which is a clinic geared towards providing free services to women who are homeless and displaced here in Metro Atlanta. It works out of the Open Door Community Center, which is on Ponce, and Emory faculty and students volunteer their time to screen women for cervical cancer screening, other sexually transmitted infection, good GYN care within those clinics for women who can't afford it and have and are displaced or homeless. So it has been a joy for us to support that clinic, because we've been able to facilitate cervical cancer screening with the PAP, but we also bought them a colposcope, which is the machine that actually helps us look with a high magnifying scope, you know, or high, it's like almost a high powered magnifying glass. And we look at the cervix and we're able to biopsy those areas that look abnormal, so we can actually diagnose women with either cancer or abnormal cells that can go to cancer.
And again, this is the Harriet Tubman
Clinic, which is within the Open Door Community Center on Ponce de Leon.
Okay. You also are going to have a 5K run and a Walk for Hope. Not this Saturday, next Saturday, January 25th.
Absolutely. We're so excited about it, because that's where we raise our funds to do these good works in the community. It's going to be held in Atlantic Station. It's on January 25th. Registration is at 7:30 in the morning. The race starts at 9, and which is a run, and the walk starts at 9:10. WSB-TV is covering our walk and run, and Northside Hospital has been a big supporter of us. Mm. We're really grateful for it. And I want people to understand the majority of the, at least a third of the funds goes towards this clinic to provide homeless and displaced women with cervical cancer screening and evaluation. And I think that that's really critical, and we think it's important. And then the rest goes towards our educational programs.
Can they go to your website if they want to? Do you have one?
Absolutely. We have our regular website, so you can see what we actually do is www.spiritfoundationinc.org. And our fundraising website, where you can go and sign up for the run, is 2014. It's www.20145krunandwalkforhope.kintera.org. And
if I go to the Spirit Foundation website, will it take me to that one?
Absolutely.
Okay, there we
There's
go.
There's a link there.
So
yes.
Just go to the spiritfoundationinc.org website, and then you can hook yourself up and get registered to go to be a part of this walk or run that's on January 25th. That's next Saturday. Let's also talk about really quickly, because we mentioned with Jennifer's case, of course, her treatment was, you know, extreme. But the range of treatment differs based on when you find it.
Absolutely.
So it can be anywhere from what to what?
Absolutely. So the range of disease is either can be in the precancerous state before it turns into cancer, or it can be stage 1 to 4. And we can actually do surgical treatment, which is a much more radical type of hysterectomy. But that's less morbid to do surgery in young women to take out the cancer than to give them chemo radiation. And surgery can be done for stage 1, stage 2A, which is when the tumor is right up in the upper vagina, and that's it. Once you start getting into 2B, 3, and 3 and beyond, you have to do chemo radiation or radiation for treatment. So if we catch it in stage 1, majority of stage 1, and the first part of stage 2A, because we divide the stages as 2A, 2B, then the patient can have the option of surgical management, which leaves her with a functioning vagina, avoids all the complications.
What does that mean, functioning vagina? Does that mean you would still be interested in having sexual intercourse?
Well,
or?
Let me tell you, when you have radiation placed into the vagina, it really makes the vagina shorter. It makes it damages the tissues within the vagina, makes sex occasionally painful and difficult. There's other late complications from radiation that can be a problem for women. So it's not that they can't still have sex after radiation. It's just that the vagina feels more normal when it's when the cancer is treated surgically than it is with radiation.
Okay. That was one of the questions I wanted to ask, but I'm glad you brought it up that way. I didn't have to kind of go into it, because that was one of the things I was asking. I was thinking, rather. Man, this is, you know, it's amazing how getting a pap smear, making certain you get checked, can make the difference between, it's just so important.
I want to tell you, when we looked at rates of screening for the pap smear here in Georgia, even in all populations, we've had good screening of within 80% to 90% in all races and ethnic groups as far as screening. The problem is follow-up of the abnormal pap test. Mm-hmm. So people here in Georgia are getting the pap test. They're just not coming back to see the doctor for the colposcopy, which identifies those abnormal cells when the pap test is abnormal.
Do you think people just don't want to know?
They're afraid. The women, sometimes they'll say to me, I was afraid, Dr. Flowers. I didn't want to know what was happening. I was scared. It just took me a long time to kind of build my confidence to come in. And I think, to be honest, if we can really encourage women, if you have an abnormal pap test, please come in, because the earlier we find these abnormal cells, the less aggressive treatment we need to do to keep you well and healthy.
So bottom line, even if the information may not be good, getting the information is more important than putting your head in the sand and acting like you just don't want to know. Don't forget, you can give us a call if you have a question, 404-880-9255. Again, 404-880-9255. And you can tweet us at CCRTD or Jaquetta W. We're going to take a quick break. Hurry up and get your questions asked, because we don't have a lot of time, but we do want to hear from you, okay? We'll be right back.